Good afternoon. It's certainly very exciting to be back in San Francisco, having gotten my start in correctional health care at the San Francisco County Jail many years ago. So it's great to be back here and sort of coming full circle from an internship in correctional health care to where I stand today. Again, I have no financial or professional relationship that might impact this session. So a road not taken, I'll just back up here a second. A road not taken is a substance abuse treatment program that we started on Rikers Island in the New York City jail system in 2007. As the deputy director of mental health then, it was very clear that we had this really impressive mental health service, but what was missing was substance abuse care, given that the majority of those folks in the mental health system also had co-occurring disorders. So it was logical that we took a real approach and focusing on drug treatment in addition to mental health care in the jail system. Substance abuse among jail inmates, as many of you know here, working in the system is pretty staggering. 68% of the population meet DSM-4 criteria for substance abuse dependence. We also know that this is probably an underestimate. I think it's certainly spoken of. That's probably about 80% or perhaps higher. In New York City, every inmate that comes into the jail system has a medical intake within 24 hours, within the first 24 hours prior to getting a bed in the jail system. And at that time, this is where the self-report happens of substance abuse. So we have between a 50% is actually a little high. We have between a 40 and 50% self-report of substance abuse. But we also know that that is a gross underestimate, given the above statistic, for many reasons. You know, people coming into jail certainly don't want to disclose other illegal activity. They don't want to, for certain reasons, disclose that they have an addiction. A certain group is overrepresented in there, people with an opiate addiction, because there are clear services. We have a very large methadone program. But the majority of substance abusers in the system don't report on intake. So the New York City jail system, as Allison discussed, is rather large, the second largest jail system in the country, between 80 to 90,000 new admissions every year, and the daily census now of about 12,000, which thankfully keeps shrinking. Last year, by this time, it was about 12,800. So we're fortunate there. So Road Not Taken, this substance abuse program, was started in 2007. It is sort of an inpatient model within the jail system. So what that means is we have designated housing locations throughout the jail system that have this program. It's a voluntary program that exists in two male general population units, two female general population units. And since this, we've expanded it, so there are three more units now. So the units themselves are housing locations. They're all dormitories, so about 50 inmate patients in a large dorm setting. They're all voluntary, so there are large recruiting efforts throughout the jail to try to find substance abusers that are looking to get treatment while incarcerated. And this is a picture of Rikers Island. It's a rather large penal colony, actually the largest penal colony in the nation, given the concentration. So there are 9 jails here. The 3 jails with these Olympic-looking rings house the program currently. Right now, I think that runway is covered in water, as I heard. So residential substance abuse treatment, the basis of this is to have a diversion program. So this is staffed with CASACs. I don't know the term out here, but these are credentialed alcohol and substance abuse counselors that are on these units. So each of the units has at least one. Some of them have 2 counselors per unit. So the staffing ratio on these dormitories is rather high, certainly higher than any of our other programs in the jail system. These inmates are eligible for a court-referred drug treatment program in lieu of continued incarceration. So there's a recruiting effort by our staff to seek out folks that are interested in the program. And then I think in the next slide I'll get into, there's also a partnership with the drug treatment courts in the five boroughs. So the curriculum that we use is evidence-based treatment. It's based on cognitive behavioral therapy. There's a structured curriculum throughout the day. So the patients have a morning meeting. Then they have 2 to 3 groups throughout the day that they must attend. So the program is voluntary, admission to the program, but it is required that you attend all of the programs on the unit. Somebody else will fill your bed. But the participation rate is rather high. The counselors not only provide drug treatment, but they also do a lot of court advocacy. So they work with the various drug courts and helping the patients on the units get an alternative to incarceration placement. So this is the partnership that I was just discussing. This is one of the more exciting parts of this program, and I think it's pretty unique to the New York City jail system. When we started the program in 2007, we reached out to the courts, to some of the directors of the treatment courts, and have continually increased that relationship and enhanced it. These folks represent about 25% of all of the inmates in A Road Not Taken. So we accept referrals directly from the court. What that means is that the inmates are currently incarcerated in Rikers Island. They're not yet in a program. The court is aware of them because they were deferred to a treatment court during their criminal justice hearings. And so then the court reaches out to us and said that John Smith is, you know, in one of the 9 jails and we would like him to go into your treatment program. And then we report back to the court on their progress in the program, while simultaneously the court is working to set them up with a program in the community. So I think this is sort of what Shira was describing. It really brings the community into the jail system and the legal system into the jail system. So rather than these patients living somewhere in the jail system without programming, they're afforded a program while they're waiting for a bed. And we hear anecdotally from the court that these folks fare better in the program once they're placed because they've already sort of gotten their feet wet with this pre-treatment model. So the counselors assist the patients through this process. They're set up with alternatives to incarceration. So the majority of whom are set up with outpatient treatment programs, about 40% of the patients that are referred directly through the court go into inpatient programs. They're monitored by the court throughout that process. And certainly some of them come back into our custody and go back through the program again. The curriculum in the program is based on CBT. It's not a 12-step or an abstinence-based program. Cognitive behavioral therapy is really the genesis of the curriculum that we use, and motivational interviewing. It's around a loose therapeutic community. There are no circles where an inmate has to sit within the circle and sort of deal with that wrath. But it's a very structured program, and the curriculum that's delivered, there are many modules. There are about 7 modules that they go through throughout the weeks. It's loosely around a 60-day program, and we really chart their progress through the curriculum to see sort of where they're at and if there's change being made. We use Prochaska and DiClemente's transtheoretical change model to look at where they are at throughout their change process. The program is really a pre-treatment model. So we are not disillusioned that somebody is going to go through 54 days of a jail treatment program and get out of jail and be abstinent and never pick up again. So That would be foolish if there's a take-home message to those looking to start a drug treatment program. I think that the best you can do is to get people really contemplating, you know, their lives and to start thinking about what it would look like to live a life without drugs. And so as people move through the program, people really, you know, start off in a pre-contemplative phase, get to a contemplative phase. If we're lucky, they get to a preparation phase. The majority probably stay in that contemplation phase, you know, throughout their 54 days. We hope that, you know, when they leave jail and enter into a treatment program, certainly having gone through those two models, they're in a more advantageous position to be receptive to drug treatment in the community. So the turnover in the New York City jail system is really incredible. As I said, there are about 90,000 admissions every year. 30% of the entire population turns over in 3 days, 50% in 7 days, and 70% in 14 days. So you may wonder why our length of stay is 54 days. We've put together sort of an algorithm looking at their outlying court date, their charges, and when we interview patients for the program, we're looking at people who we think will probably stay here a longer amount of time. You know, to bring someone into a program to be discharged in 4 days is probably not the best use of our time or theirs. So we actually do a pretty good job of estimating this given the length of stay. And it also, you know, allows us to get a pretty good dose of treatment. So these are where the referrals come from. We get a lot of referrals from the community, from the drug courts, as I mentioned, with that relationship. Attorney referrals, so legal aid, public defenders will contact us who are aware of the program. We've done a lot of outreach to the community to make the program be known in the jail system. And then within the jail, people are self-referred. People know that the program exists. They're referred through medical on their medical intake. They're referred through encounters with mental health, and then there are Department of Corrections referrals that know about the program. As you could imagine, the need for programs like this and bed space far outweighs even our ability to treat. We really treat a small fraction of the population, but nonetheless, there is treatment happening. So there's a clinical screening that's done by the CASAC counselors. Usually this happens in the person's housing area prior to placement in the program. The patient signs a memorandum of understanding, which really makes clear the rules of the program and the expectations of them in the program regarding engagement. And if they're not engaged, they're aware that, you know, the counselors will certainly work with them, but after a period of time, if it's not working, that they'll go back to general population. Once they come into the program, they are released, obviously, into the community without treatment, into the jail system. They might be sentenced. If they're sentenced, they'll go to a different jail, but we don't yet have this program, into prison, or hopefully most of our folks would go into community treatment. So we did a preliminary evaluation of the program. The N was 785 people. This is from 2007 until 2011. We collected information upon admission and then discharge from the program. The Department of Corrections has a pretty robust data set that is not easy to infiltrate, but we managed to do so. And we compared the inmates that went through this program sort of a pre-treatment and post-treatment look to see, you know, how they did post-intervention. We looked at recidivism rate and number of incarcerations, and now we're looking at a much more robust study to look at all different factors, perhaps a regression model to see, you know, what about this program is having an effect. So the evaluation sample was the 785 people. This is from two units, two male units. None of the women were included in this evaluation. And it really had to do with when we started this program. The fidelity of the program was much tighter in the male jail at that time. In the female jail, while the program was working and effective, there were a lot of women that were just placed in this program that weren't screened. So I think this gave us a cleaner sort of understanding of how the program was faring. the results. So we looked at recidivism and number of incarcerations. So recidivism looked at the population that went into this program, and it was significantly reduced by about 14%. This is, I think, a decent number. Certainly we would like it to be higher, but 14%, even fiscally, when it's about $76,000 a year to house an inmate in New York City jail system, certainly is worth it. We're hoping that when we do this next phase of the study, we're going to see a dramatic decrease in recidivism. I'm hoping so. And the number of incarcerations per year. So this looked at per person. This looked at the number of times somebody was incarcerated the year prior and the number of times someone was incarcerated post-intervention. And this dropped by about 40%. So this wasn't. This was looking at a more granular level of an individual. So this is certainly exciting. The next step, as I was just alluding to, would be a more rigorous evaluation. I think we have the ability to do that now with an electronic medical record and larger data epidemiological staff. We're setting up new units now. We actually just got two DCJS residential substance abuse treatment grants. So we've added a co-occurring disorder unit, two of them, and we're hoping to add a third, which is really exciting. So the plan is to continue to expand this program throughout the jail system. Obviously, this is a financial issue, but the program is relatively inexpensive to run. Anecdotally, from the Department of Corrections, these units have had the lowest incidence of violence. The jail system houses people according to security classification. It's rated by inmate, not jail. And these units, until about a month ago, had mixed classification. So they were the only units that had mixed security classification and virtually no violence. I think the take-home message is that if you have a program with a common goal and you're treating people as humans with dignity, and there's a staff that's truly dedicated to them, like probably everyone here is sharing, people respond really well, as everyone here probably would. So the plan is to keep expanding this program, and if you have any questions, I would be happy to answer.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Sure. Thank you.